Nobody gets to lunch in time. Now let me see. It's a bit squeezed, this image. Let me just see if I can get it vertical.
No, it's not better. Yeah, I have some graphs that are like vertical, so it might be easier. Oh, this is going to be much better. Great. So I'm going to talk about how to rule out whole paradigms or whole classes of models for cosmic acceleration. This is work that I've done in collaboration with Wayne, who is here, and the person who has done really 95% of all the work, Michael Mortensen. He's Wayne's former student at Chicago. He's now postdoc at Ohio State, and he's really responsible for essentially everything I'll talk about today. It appears that we've tried to hit consecutive issues of Physical Review D here with papers, but I'm going to talk about a majority of these papers that have to do with various aspects of this work. And the main idea is, here's the main philosophy behind the whole work. Data are now consistent with under CDM, but that may change. And so the question is, what observational strategies do we use in order to rule out, ideally, not just a model or two, or not just to measure cosmological parameters, but to rule out whole classes of models? So here's possible alternatives that people here are very familiar with. Equation of state may vary way from minus one. You can have early dark energy, and early dark energy is defined as dark energy significant around recombination and maybe a little bit later. You can have non-zero curvature, even though now it's pinned to almost 1%. It could be non-zero. You can have modified gravity. And then you can have more than one of these weird things, and there is a precedent in that already, in that we have dark matter and dark energy. So this could, in principle, be true. So the question is, how do you rule out, and how do you go about devising observational strategies to rule out some of these paradigms? And so here's really the key point in this last bullet point. We predict ranges in cosmological functions, distance, Hubble parameter, and growth, given current or future observations. So I think I'll illustrate soon what I mean by this. We predict, we make predictions that are in the context of any given class of models of dark energy. So here's how we divided classes of models for dark energy, for cosmic acceleration. As you go outward, you have more and more complex models. You have lambda CDM first. Then you have quintessence, and quintessence here is a little bit of a code word for people who are theorists here. By quintessence means, we mean any equation of state that's roughly between minus one and one. Okay, it's bounded there. That's what we mean by quintessence. And then we have what we call smooth dark energy, which is still GR, but equation of state now between minus five and three, so it's in a wider range. Then you can have a flattened or curved universe, and you can have significant early dark energy or zero early dark energy. And of course, by definition, lambda CDM has no early dark energy, but all of the other classes, you can have one or the other. So the question is, in this decision circle, so to speak, not quite decision tree, how do you find your way and how do you rule out various classes? So you rule out, presumably, the innermost ones are earlier, easier to rule out than the outermost classes of models. Yes. That we didn't. We didn't vary absolutely all things you could. So here's how we model dark energy at low redshift. We model dark energy with principal components. And again, for maybe more theoretical types, they are basically shapes in redshift. They are weights of the equation of state of dark energy. So they are really shapes or parameters that describe equation of state variable in redshift. So these shapes we pre-compute from future data. So they are fixed for our purposes. And then the coefficients, the parameters that come with them, are these alpha I. We go here to the crazy limit, and we actually consider 500 bins, which aficionados will recognize. This is 500 principal components. And of course, 500 is too many, but only some first number of them will be relevant. And, you know, first has one bump, second principal component has two bumps, and so on. It's quite familiar to people that only maybe a couple of them can be well measured. However, it's a different question, how many of them do you need to describe variations in these functions? That's actually logically a little bit different thing. And the answer is roughly 10. So these 10 are basically, for all intents and purposes, that's all you need to, in full generality, describe dark energy models, quintessence of smooth dark energy. And so we have basically, we did some convergence tests. We have 10 new parameters. And then you can describe, for example, quintessence models. We try to find some perverse models that roughly fit the data just to see the, you know, how well they fit. So here's a perverse quintessence model, completely unnatural, I'm sure. It's a quadratic potential with an offset, and the field oscillates around the bottom. So it doesn't matter. This is completely a toy thing for us just to see, you know, how something that weird looking can be fit. There are some oscillations, and there's a global trend. And you can see these PCs fitted very well. Fit is not great at high Z, but by this time, dark energy gets out of the way. And so you don't need to fit it there. For observations, this is perfectly good.
Well, you have to pay a very sharp feature, then you probably can't do
it. We try to find one that won't be fit well by these 10 pieces, and I think we couldn't. That doesn't mean that you can't. It's that hard. And, you know, of course, if you have, maybe you have something that's latently rolled out by data, so that might be easier.
Well, it's like extremely quickly jump.
It's not
a Z0.5.
It's not the fit to WZ that matters. It's that it reproduces the distance redshift.
Right. It's not here. It may be parked like here. But you won't see the difference in the observables. That's what I have. And so that actually, it's really, we were hoping to find some where you need to go to higher, but it turns out this is really doing a great job. It's just telling you about how the smoothness of observable relative to the equation.
That is the definition of principal component that is based on the observable observation.
No. This is just saying that 10 numbers describe W really well in terms of how well it shows up in
computer. Yeah, but these EIs, they depend on observations, don't they?
They do, but that's not the crucial point. No, you could take
it
from other.
I think that is the crucial point because that's the point that they're supposed to capture all the information in the observations. So if you fit those, that means you fit all the observations. So.
Yeah, that's right. The first order that is important. Yes. Yeah.
So it seems like you would if you wanted something that wouldn't be well fit by the first 10 principal components, right? Since the distance measurements, for example, are, you know, double integrals over that, you would need something that's extremely high amplitude oscillations, but you've restricted yourself here to quintessence models that are bounded from below at minus one.
Yes, you would then have that tension. And for smooth dark energy, W can be from here to here, and then you have an easier time doing that.
Right.
That's a good point, too. So I'm sorry this came out. Since I changed the resolution, now all the arrows are pointing to the wrong spots. But so I'll describe what I'm saying here, and everything is shifted. Sorry about that. We modeled early dark energy, and the arrow should be pointing to this parameter. So early dark energy is significant at early time. And it's described by this parameter, W infinity. This is just kind of a first pass in modeling early dark energy. That's not to say this is a good model, just minimalistic way to model dark energy significant by Z. Z max is 1.7 plus, so at redshifts greater than 1.7, we allow for early dark energy models this parameter to vary away from minus 1. So its fiducial value is, of course, minus 1, which is a lambda case. So this is one extra parameter for early dark energy. And for modified gravity, the arrow should be pointing here. This is Neil's favorite parameter, gamma, which, as we heard yesterday, which is a completely phenomenological parameter that you stick in this fitting function for growth. And this is just a fitting function. It's not like fundamental or anything. And it turns out that gamma nearly constant recovers basically any GR model. If you have any equation of state, you may have to fix it up a little. But that's a really nice advantage. And another huge advantage, it's very easy to implement. Anybody can, you know, do a fitting formula like this. And then you measure change growth just by changing gamma. Of course, the disadvantage that some people in the audience pointed out clearly, and that's kind of obvious in retrospect, is the actual growth in modified gravity models is scale-dependent, and this is clearly scale-independent growth, linear growth in this parameterization. But so we use gamma. Again, just the first take on modified gravity, don't trying to fit it with great generality. And methodology is then clear. We start with a parameter set. So these are good old cosmological parameters. In lambda CDM, you have only omega matter and Hubble constant, then you may have curvature. You may have early dark energy, and if you have quintessence or smooth dark energy, you have another 10. This is 10 parameters or so. So you have anywhere between 2 and 15 parameters. Use either current or future data that I'll describe. Employ the usual microfield machine. And the key point is here, from these parameters, propagate and make predictions for functions. Any function you want, you can then make prediction in that model. Cosmological functions are expansion rate, distance, and growth. And again, everything is offset because of my change of resolution. But and you know, people are familiar how these look. I'm not going to spend much time. But the more important thing is the graphs that I'm going to show have a certain structure. So again, this arrow should be pointing here. What I'm going to be showing now, I'm going to show a bunch of graphs. On the y-axis is the prediction around some fiducial model. This is relative deviation in some observable, distance growth, and so on. On the x-axis, I'll have redshift as a function of redshift. The inner contour is 68, and the lines are 95% prediction from that data set. The maximum extent of supernova data is by the vertical line, which is 1.7. This is assumed future supernova data. And oftentimes, you'll see this narrowing, which people recognize as pivot point. This is where prediction is the tightest. And in fact, the graphs I'll show are slightly different. They have the same thing, except they have gray and blue contours. Gray will be simpler class of models, and blue will be more complex class of models. For example, flat lambda CEDM and curved lambda CEDM. So this is the kind of graph you can expect in the next some slides. And so the first prediction is a little bit out of chronological order. First, let's look at the future data. So now, this is SNAP and Planck, and I'm not supposed to use the word SNAP anymore because it doesn't officially exist anymore. It's now JDEM and so on. But we use SNAP's distribution of supernovae in redshift. So that's where that name comes from, 2000 supernovae. And from Planck, it turns out all you need to describe dark energy or to fit dark energy is two numbers, omega matter H squared and distance to recombination. This ignores integrated Sachs-Wolf late time. But apart from ISW, this is Planck and CMB tell us two numbers on dark energy. And we have supernovae. This is kind of important. There are statistical errors, a systematic flaw in supernova observations to mimic systematic errors. Any questions about that?
Well, you're not using the amplitude from Planck? Combined with sigma 8 will do something?
No. No. You could. You could add more to this, but no. You could add clusters. You could add weak lensing. You could add stuff. No, we are just, this is what we're kind of the idea is let's use distance measures to predict growth. And then on top of that, you would measure growth and see how it compares. So I'm going to show that in a moment. So that's kind of the logic behind using only distance measures.
But here's the point, because Planck will give you essentially the average fluctuations at threshold of 100. So you can tie in this growth with local measurements.
Yeah, let me show exactly how it plays. I think I agree with you completely. So here's basically the logic. None of these graphs I mentioned are coming up. So this is lambda CDM. Gray is flat model. We have a flat lambda CDM, and blue is curved. And these are predictions on, all of them are shifted, growth to Z of 1,000, growth to Z of 0. As Ichiro pointed out yesterday, I think you have to compare growth from one Z to another. So this is growth to Z of 0. This is distance. This is Hubble parameter. And notice, so a few things you notice from here. First of all, look at the range of axes. This is future data. And look at the excellent predictions to about a couple of percent or better in all of these. And now notice the following. These are predictions using these distance measures on all cosmological functions. So for example, we've never used growth here. Growth is not used. And yet, growth is within lambda CDM. Growth is very accurately predicted. Now you can come with your, I don't know what CMB amplitude, I'd have to think about it, but certainly with your weak lensing measurements of growth, and presumably they'll have large error bars, but you can put on top of that and you can try to start ruling out some of these models. And the idea is, if you have a measurement that lies outside of these contours, and if you're sure of your systematic errors and so on, you have then ruled out that class of models once and for all, because there's no more freedom. Is there any question about that? That's kind of the main principle. So then what you see here is that distance and growth are better to 1%, and you even have these amazing pivot points. The one in Hubble parameter for flat lambda CDM is 0.1% prediction. So any measurement of Hubble parameter will be much worse than that. But that's OK. The prediction is really, really tight. You have to be inside here. And that's easy to understand. Flat lambda CDM has only two parameters, omega matter and Hubble constant. And as you vary two parameters, you're doing the pivot type change. So it's not crazy to then the fact that you find that prediction is so tight. Okay, lambda CDM, excellent predictions from future data. Now, here is quintessence, which, remember, in our language means W between minus 1 and 1. Without early dark energy and with early dark energy, and let's see what happens. First of all, you look at, and the red line is representative models, so by the time you allow completely phenomenological quintessence, meaning W of Z, any given model will be wiggling like crazy in W and therefore in the Hubble parameter. So, from fundamental physics, this might be completely, may or may not seem ridiculous, but that's okay. This is a phenomenological approach. You allow all generality.
So you have that, and even so, you get excellent predictions on distance, on growth to redshift of 1,000 and growth to redshift of 0. They are slightly wider than before, and if you have early dark energy, the one thing you realize, the arrow should be pointing right here, is that with early dark energy, what does it do? It suppresses growth at high z. So therefore, z to redshift of 1,000 is suppressed. So that's why blue suppressed downwards. So growth is suppressed means you go from gray to blue in this particular panel. So this is sort of the smoking gun of early dark energy. If you say by some luck you make measurement of growth here, and you're outside of gray and inside blue, that means you're disfavoring no early dark energy, and you're favoring early dark energy. Yeah, this is growth between this z and 1,000. And this is growth between this z and z of 0. And so if you have early dark energy, what's happening is early dark energy happens here. So this growth compares this redshift and 0, so it doesn't see it. But this growth compares this redshift and 1,000. So it crosses where the dark energy, early dark energy is. Does that make sense? It's happening at high z. And so here you're only comparing to z of 0, but here you're comparing to z of 1,000. And you can have observations that measure one or both. We haven't done it, but I would guess similar. Our amplitude depends, I guess, on the mass, but the direction would be the same, I think. So you're right. We didn't do neutrinos, mass of neutrinos, and this—that's one of the things we didn't do, right? So, but that would sort of early dark energy could be taken to be a code word for mass of neutrinos here as well.
That doesn't make sense because that's a scale determinant, isn't it? The mass, the effect of mass of neutrinos.
Right.
On but scales where the neutrinos are smooth, this is this the W of zero and. Early dark energy is massive neutrinos in the smooth limit.
It's a scale independent, you're saying, in that limit?
No, if you wanted to interpret it that way, it's the high K limit of what you would get from massive neutrino growth rates.
It's scale independent on small scales.
Okay. Yeah, so that was flat quintessence, and by the time you go to now, to current quintessence, so flat is. Sorry, gray is flat and blue is now curved. What does curvature do? Curvature again messes with the growth and with the distance as well. And then you get shift in growth to today, it turns out, and you also get negative offset in distance. And the one-sided offsets you sometimes see are very easy to understand. They are actually artifacts of our assumptions for quintessence. Remember, quintessence fiducial is at minus one, and we don't allow it to dip below minus one. We only allow it to go above minus one. So from that one-sided allowance for deviations in W, you basically get one-sided deviations in D. So for example, if you measure distance to be here relative to fiducial model, then you either say W has to be below minus one, or else you allow some of these other classes that allow deviations in distance there. Okay? Again, arrows are pointing all the wrong spots. I don't know anymore, but you can read and see. This is a big one. Now curvature allows downward deviations in distance. And if you now have perverse cases with both quintessence and curvature and early dark energy, the impressive thing in all these graphs is that if you look at the scale, it's still, what do we have, 5%, 10% in Hubble parameter because their wiggling is allowed, but these that's smooth, and you see, for example, large quintessence, early dark energy and curvature now allow 20% downward deviations in growth, for example. Okay, so then the really actually kind of powerful statement about dating cosmology is that, you know, you look at 10-20% even for very perverse cases. And I'll show current data next, and you will see it's not that much worse. It's actually still decent measurements. And if you now have smooth early dark energy, now kind of all hell is breaking loose, because by the time if you have WB any value, W of Z, and if you have flat, no early dark energy, that's okay, which is shown here. But if you allow now everything to go wild, you would think all hell breaks loose and nothing is predicted. But that's actually not true. And here's the graph. Again, unfortunately, everything shifted, but that's okay. If I look at, you don't have to pay it, this is a bit detailed. If you look at the growth to redshift of 1,000 and redshift of 0, in models where early dark energy varies, or curvature varies, or both early dark energy and curvature vary. You see these models taken from chains. You see certain kind of patterns.
What early dark energy does is it uniformly lowers growth to ratio 1000 between here and there. While what curvature does is something different, right? And then the two together. And then if you had this other growth is of zero, they again do different things for the reason I already explained. So you can see uniform patterns here, even in the case when you have any W and curvature and early dark energy. So what then we did is find a completely phenomenological linear combination of these quantities of redshift of 1 and redshift of 1.7 that is actually well predicted by future data, even in models where everything varies. And that prediction is shown here. So this is K is awesome coefficient. So this is a linear combination of G0 and G of these two parameters at Z of 1.7, and here it's at Z of 1. And you'll see that even these crazy models all fall in some line. Therefore, if by some stroke of luck you make future measurement that falls outside of that line, in principle, you have ruled out all of those models. Now, of course, I'm not saying how likely it is in any alternative model to be outside of this region. Maybe that's very unlikely to happen even in modified gravity. But for example, if you were here, maybe you would claim modified gravity because of this. So I think these somebody yesterday, I think Pengji has shown graphs where you have omega dark energy distance and omega dark energy geometry and how they can be constrained. And I think this approach generalizes that to look at just all functions at all redshift and make predictions. But it's in the same spirit, I think. And so modified gravity, ignore the top panels. This parameter gamma is in the lower panels. Here we have lambda CDM, and here you have quintessence. And notice, first of all, lambda CDM prediction on gamma is incredibly precise. One thing you may notice is that gamma actually is not constant. It varies with z. But if you look at the scale here, the scale is incredibly zoomed in. So if you look at any reasonable, if you zoom out and think about realistic, this really looks like a constant. But it's so incredibly well predicted to be basically 0.55. What we call 0.55 today. And then if you allow quintessence, then of course, now you look, the scale is much bigger. But you see, you still have good, even quintessence with early dark energy, you have about 0.02 measurement on gamma. To put this in context, Alexei showed current measurements of gamma about 0.1. And so current measurements are bigger, future measurement might be comparable to this band. But the point here is that the prediction is good, is tight, even for quintessence. Now, let me say a few words about current data. In terms of current data, we used supernova union population, full WMAP power spectrum, not just distance, but now I have all WMAP with all parameters, BAO distance from Sloan, and H0 from Shoes. And predictions that I'll show next are not around some fiducial model. We're not doing Fisher matrix, and we are now doing around the best fit on the CDM model. Okay. So here's how functions are predicted on absolute scale for lambda CDM, and you look at the really tight predictions even with current data. This is not relative to fiducial model. This is relative just on the absolute scale. So here's Hubble parameter distance.
So, gamma. Could we go back? So you use that baryonic acoustic oscillation, and you just assume that like one sigma error, and then it's Gaussian, is that?
Yes.
Which is not.
So what are you suggesting? Non-Gaussian?
I mean, I'm saying if you just have, say, three sigma detection, that means that the three sigma error is a hundred times, is infinite times bigger than.
Yeah, right. Error. I don't think we do non-Gaussian.
Okay.
Or the error bar. Yeah. But if that's known, we can put it in. But I don't think.
Well, we can talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah,
okay.
I just wanted to.
That's a valid point. Yes. If you are high details, it matters how you implement it.
Exactly. Gaussian. Yeah, that's true, but if you do put the BAO feature in the wrong place, you doubly penalize your chi-squared, because you not only have a poor fit at the true BAO scale, but also where this additional feature is located.
At the wrong Gaussian, you said?
I'm saying if you look at what happened to your BAO chi-squared, mm-hmm. as you went far away from the minimum, right, it's the penalty if you go way out is twice the squared significance of the detection.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But it's not Gaussian, that's my point. That it doesn't quadratically increase with the distance.
If you go up to the 3.5 or 4 sigma point, then it's not Gaussian. Yeah.
Keep on staying 3.5.
Yeah.
So
sorry, go ahead.
Oh.
So anyway, these are absolute constraints, but
of course, what I was showing before is relative to some model, and so this is relative to the best fit model. So here we have, with the usual shifts in my text, growth to z of 1,000, distance, Hubble parameter, and now these are a little bit different. This is growth to z of 0. This is f times g parameter from like redshift distortions, and this is the growth index. And I don't want to look into any kind of great detail here, flat or curved. One thing you notice if you eyeball the scales, it's about factor to 2 to 3 worse only relative to future data, not factor of much. Now, one would have to exercise caution in interpreting this because it is 2 to 3 factor worse at every redshift. But there are many redshifts, so to speak. So the overall gain that I'll talk about in a moment is actually bigger than 2 to 3, but exactly what it is model independent. But anyway, the bottom line is these bands, these predictions from data, and this is relative to flat lambda CDM, and these are examples of flat lambda CDM in a red line. They are about the factor of 2 to 3 worse relative to future data. So they're still quite good to say better than 5%, and in some cases, to incredibly good accuracy. Here's current quintessence. So current data, quintessence models, flat nor early dark energy. Again, relative to lambda CDM, which is gray, you see broadenings, in some case drastic ones in case of gamma. But if you look at the scale, again, the predictions are tight. And notice one thing also, for example, some of these things to measure directly would be very hard. Hubble parameter is very hard to measure directly, especially at high Z. Growth is kind of hard to measure directly. But predictions are tight. So that's good. At least predictions are tight, and then you can put further measurements. Okay, so here's what current data prefer in terms of supernova data, mostly prefer. This is actually W of Z that data prefer if you read it literally. And you see W that both dips below -1 and goes above +1. If you read it literally, of course, there's significant systematics left in the data. But I think this is kind of useful to eyeball just to see what the current, best fit W0, WA is dashed. Best fit lambda CDM is like the zero value. And best fit W of Z is the solid line. And the points are the data. And the 1 and 2 sigma regions are regions in one of them, like maybe W0, WA, I'm not sure. So this is what the data, and you can see, of course, there's systematics left. So this is still consistent with W minus 1, but it's interesting to look at that. So here's if you now take all those constraints, this is more familiar, I think, projected down to cosmological parameters. Here's sigma 8 and omega matter plane from current data. This is all current data. 1 and 2 is 68 and 95% contours. This is lambda CDM, flat. This is quintessence with flat. And this is now, if you relax, if you have quintessence, that's both non-flat with the early dark energy. And for cluster aficionados here, there's no cluster data in this. This is only supernovae and WMAP and BAO. So first of all, everything agrees with cluster measurements of about 0.8. And you can also see if you find, by some crazy stroke of lack of luck, I'm not sure, if you find lower values of sigma 8 in the future, that can be explained by quintessence models. But if you find higher values of sigma 8, that's actually inconsistent with BAO plus supernova plus WMAP. Questions about this? Here's now current and future data on W0, WA. These are familiar parameters to people. This is flat and curved. Red is future, and blue is current. And so these are the contours. And notice quintessence models say if you bound the equation state to be between -1 and 1, you should only be looking at this quadrant. But if you are free to allow equation of state to be anything, then you look everywhere. And you see, again, future constraints are better, but not by a huge amount. And these are constraints on the principal components for those people who care. The top row is the current data. The bottom row is the future data. These are principal component coefficients from 1 to 6. So these are first 6 principal components. And again, one thing you see quite nicely is that the constraints are not bad. This should be pointing out to the dashed line. So the dashed lines are values, fiducial values of these alphas for our crazy quintessence models with oscillating field around the bottom. And so you can see that the data, this is, flat or curved. This is current data is good and future data is very good, but you see constraints. These are kind of in funny units. These are, of course, dimensionless parameters, but what does it mean for 1 and minus 1? They're actually quite decent constraints. And flat ones are a little bit better than the curved ones. Any questions about this? I'm not sure. Yes?
If you use different data, but use the same basis, the same eigenvectors?
Right. So we pre-computed principal components for future data and fed them into Markov chain Monte Carlo for the current data. So strictly speaking, our principal components are not uncorrelated anymore. They're now correlated. But we don't take that as a bad thing or anything. These are now just parameters that are correlated with each other, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, but they're also quite different.
From the current data, they would have been different, but it's a little bit difficult to compute them from current data. It could be done. Probably in your group, you've done it. I'm not sure. But it's more difficult. It could be done, but the gains are not that huge. We just want a very convenient basis that's nearly diagonal, but not exactly. So, yeah, so these are the constraints on the PCs. Okay, so if there, let's see, I'm zooming through my talk and kind of returning the time that Ichiro took. let's see, I have a couple more slides and then lunch. Figures of merit. So we studied the figures of merit in our most recent paper, and the most common choice is the area of the, and then 68 or 95, let's call it 68% ellipse in the W0WA plane. I should say inverse area, that's kind of the key, I forgot to say it here. So here's a picture, you have W0WA measurements, you have this ellipse, and 1 over the area of the ellipse is the figure of merit that most people use. And then this is in more technical language, this is determinant of that matrix to the minus 1/2, and the 6.17 turn is used to kill the 95 thing here, so it's really 1 over the area of the, oh, I guess it's area is taken out also by the pi, so it's really 1 over sigma in W pivot, which is the W that decorrelates these two, times WA. Okay, so this is a common figure of merit, and we were searching. This is one criticism against this. It's quite constrained. It's only based on these two parameters, but what if you have a richer dark energy sector and you'd like to use a more complicated figure of merit that can capture your favorite dark energy model that's nothing like this, that's not well described by W0WA? Oh, okay, so here we have a little bit of a disaster. But it's okay. I'll describe what this means. Let us generalize that formula. Remember, it's determinant to the minus 1/2 of this plane. Let's look at the determinant of the principal component that's n-dimensional covariance matrix of n principal components. Let's take that determinant to the minus 1/2, and let's just normalize it by some prior so that we work in, everything is dimensionless anyway, but let's just normalize by a prior so that we are comparing to some standard that we know. So this is really proportional to the, again, inverse volume of the n-dimensional ellipsoid. And this is, of course, for the full Markov chain Monte Carlo, so we have banana in an n-dimensional space having to do with principal components. Because remember, they're correlated with the way we computed them. So here's the main and only graph I'm going to show here. And this, by the way, generalizes the ideas from the panel that I think here Chris and I served on a couple of years ago, where these more general figures of merit have been discussed that can describe more dark energy models. So here's that figure of merit, and high is good. As a function of the principal components, and this is cumulative. So this is cumulative figure of merit as you take more principal components into account as you go from 1 to 2 to 3 and so on. This is the future data, this is the current data, and this is the ratio of the future to current data. So this is improvement in this figure of merit. And what you see from here is about to about 6th component, figure of merit is improving, and beyond 6th component, it flattens off. So it seems that current and future data and then the ratio are telling us more and more up to the 6th number in the equation of the state. So this is kind of the general edge. That's not to say that you need 6 numbers to describe your dark energy model. You can usually 2 is enough, or 3. But some people, like, for example, Andy Albrecht and so on, are strong pushers of the idea, and I think that's very reasonable that there's more information there. We shouldn't be ignoring it. So it seems that up to the 6th PC is where it's improving. And you see that the ratio is about 100. So in this metric, you do 100 times better with future data than with current. What you also see is that things are pretty weakly dependent on flat, open, and all that, right? But one thing is that flat models actually do better than curved models by about the factor of, I don't know what this is, 2 or so. So one question is, how can you go, if you have a curved universe, if you have allow curvature, and you're only improving by a factor of, I don't know, 50, how can you add more data so that you get back where with the future data you're improving by a factor of 150 relative to what you want? And the answer to that is, the arrow should be pointing here, you need a measurement of distance at the ratchet of 1 to about 1%. So if you have your favorite BAO survey,
that can measure BAO feature at to distance to 1%, at redshift of 1, then you go from these lower curves to this upper curve
by more. So another way to show it is shown in this graph, where you have on the x-axis the first principle component, and on the y-axis you have omega curvature.
And the two are actually correlated. But you see you break a lot of degeneracy as soon as you add this measurement of distance at 0, 1. Any questions about that? Okay, so here's some conclusions. Examples of future predictions. Flat lambda CDM, distance and growth to 1% everywhere. And there's this pivoted Hubble parameter to 0.1, extremely precisely predicted. And the growth rate to 0.1%. So again, these two are infinitely more precisely predicted than you'll ever measure them. So that's good. You don't have to measure the error. You just have to know where this prediction is. Quintessence, again, now you have 5% with one-sided deviations, the way we assume quintessence. Smooth dark energy, even though now this blood, they kind of blow up, you still have these specific consistency relations that you can test with future data, with, say, growth data once you have distance data. And then GR, you have testing GR, you have gamma to 5%, and even with arbitrary equation of state. Again, this is comparable. 5% in gamma is like 0.025, which is comparable to future error in gamma. So prediction is about as good as the error you'll have with new measurement. And here is about the figures of merit. Significant improvement in the first 6 PCs, and I think I just talked about this. You see improvement you need. If you have BAO measurement, you can actually get a full improvement, which in this metric is about a factor of 100 by future to current data. And so even though we found, and I think others have found, that first few PCs, 2 or 3, are sufficient to fit almost any model you've thought of, it's wise to keep an open mind for higher PCs that can be quite well measured with upcoming data. Thank you.
Any more questions? This is a super clear. Okay, great. Okay, so then we'll break for lunch, and then I guess we'll reconvene.